B-Pod Studios.
Now. Sports Talk. While you're on the clock, this is Zulak and Bertrand.
We're sports show radio hosts.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
With second down looming from midfield, Matthew Slater taking up his familiar pose in victory formation as Brady drops to the knee. Razor sharp all day long here at Gillette. The Patriots quarterback threw for 343 yards, and the Pats remain unbeaten at home. And now they've got to take a performance like today's and build on it, travel to Kansas City with it to beat the Chiefs for the second time this year, as they will meet in the AFC Championship game next Sunday in Kansas City.
One morning, I woke up and I knew.
Dan Shaughnessy is with us here on Zolak and Bertrand.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you, Zoe.
Another award.
Thank you, Zoe.
13th time.
Yes, I was saying, I think I first won that writing about Scott Zolak back in the day. That's what made the difference back then.
That's a good one.
Still over the line.
Still my wall in my basement.
Those Zolak columns, you know.
Then you had the Zolak column last week, which you were 100% correct on. Phillip Rivers has same amount of playoff wins as I do. So we are very much alike. Yeah. Yeah, not playoff wins, but playoff... zero wins against New England.
I mean, you and Tom Brady have a lot in common. He has 13 AFC Championship games. You've got 13.
Yeah, I'm just like the
AP
Patriots.
Writer of the Year.
That's right. I'm just like them.
You and him, very much alike.
Yep. It's it's always good. Always good to have that. You know, the ceremonies in North Carolina. So it's a trip to Winston-Salem.
So based on Winston-Salem, the amount of times you win, like the Patriots,
yeah.
Does that make other guys like Volin a tomato can? Like, what are you up against?
No, I voted for Mike Reese. You know, I think Mike Reese is killing it. So, but we have, and Volin would be a good vote. He's the man. Trolling Volin's great. You got it.
You guys are like promoting Kansas City newspapers and stuff.
Yeah, what's up with that? Can you explain that?
Tell me. I don't know.
So the Boston Globe Twitter account yesterday told everyone, if you're looking for great coverage of the Chiefs this week, go sign up for the Kansas City Star.
Maybe it's some conjunction thing. Maybe they're doing it for us.
Yeah, maybe. Mutual aid there.
It sounds like a corporation deal.
Like
in Kansas City, they're saying, if you want to know about the Patriots, read the Boston Globe. Must be.
So, Dan, last week, as you wrote, you, sirs, are no tomato cans about the San Diego Chargers of Los Angeles. And now you've watched how it all played out. You've seen it. What do you say today?
I pledged not to diminish that victory if it did turn out to be a victory, and I am not diminishing it, and it would not be a case. And I know we can have some fun with the stupidity of the defense that they kept putting out there, the Chargers, that is.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But I'm not going to take anything away. That was Patriots 101 from 2007 dominance. The first six times they had the ball, they had five touchdown drives, 4-for-4. One punt, and then the sixth. It was just, I thought the game plan. Again,
what was your reaction when they took the ball?
I'm like, something's up. And it didn't occur to me. You probably knew, they want to expose this defense and establish themselves and just, you know, we're going to take it to you and show you what we're going to do all day, which is what they did. I just thought, he's mixing it up here. And
I must say this. Moving forward, say there's one more game. Mm-hmm. Say there's two more games. If there's no wind, I think they're taking the football.
Okay.
Oh.
Even in a dome-controlled environment, they will take the football.
There you have it. It was, again, I would not diminish that one and say, the other team sucked and all that stuff. Again, and there's been cases where, you know, some over the years, when the Colts came in here 4 years ago, whatever, the Titans, the Texans every time, you know, easy to diminish the divisional round victory as a team that just didn't show up. The Chargers, they had a better season, regular season than the Patriots. They had all those road wins. They were legit. And we saw their flaws, but that was the Patriots being good more than the other team being bad, in my view. I think the Patriots would have taken it to anybody that day, the way they were going on Sunday at home. I just thought, so yes, I pledged not to tomato can the Chargers in that one. I'm not doing it. We can have some fun with the fact that they didn't change the damn defense one time, and certainly in the first half, playing that zone and just letting Tom do what he does. No pressure, all that stuff.
I said it during the broadcast. There was zero adjustments made on our
part. God, zero adjustments. It was like, McFly, let's go here. Nothing.
It's so, like they didn't pay attention to their audiovisual department that they were so concerned with last week about not being able to flip it to the East Coast.
I'm still.
Like, what
I'm
film
not
gonna, did you watch last week?
Yeah, and I'm, I know you guys. I'm not hanging them out to dry for not staying on the East Coast for 2 weeks. You know, I mean, they would have had to plan for Kansas City as well as New England going into their Baltimore game.
Well, that's what you do when you're a road team and you go on a run.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would do that. I mean, the Patriots do it when they know the regular season like 6 months in advance, and we got two games on the West Coast, and we'll do that. I don't think that was a logical thing to do at that point. Again, they would have had to, so many permutations for them to do that. I'm not holding that against them. I am holding not changing the defense in forever. What was that?
But you know logistically what their reason was for not doing
well,
it.
Well, allegedly they cheaped out because of the video equipment.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's not good.
So, Dan, they wanted to. They tried to. They explored it. And then it ended up being that they couldn't get their videos.
Weird. Yeah.
I mean, of all the things, Dan.
Yeah. And I had a friend who
the Patriots go on the road. And, Dan, when the players get on the plane, they are handed the iPad with the game already loaded.
Of course. Of course.
It's already broken down.
Yeah.
Broken. Broken down.
I heard you guys talking yesterday, too, about the owner's vans coming in and the buses and all that stuff. And because I had a friend who was in the traveling group for the Chargers. And I went down before the game and chatted. And this was the one that's way down left corner by the lighthouse corner on that side. That's,
okay.
And that's where the ownership, there's like, it's like 120 seat. It's all a big, big thing. And then I was supposed to go down halftime and meet this person's dad. And I just didn't want to do it. Cause at halftime, I mean,
yeah,
and I did, I went
great.
Back down there. It was a graveyard. I mean, no one, they weren't even drinking down there. They were just whipped. They wanted to go home. Even in the owner's box, whoever was representing.
Well, they
down there.
Took their sweet old time getting out of their SUVs though. Out of the bus.
Look at them.
You know,
look at them.
A handshaking.
That's weird.
So their owners.
That's the
if you didn't hear the story
chicanery.
Yesterday, the owners in their SUVs ahead of the team buses pulled into the stadium. And because they took their sweet time getting out of the car and then congregating around the cars, the SUVs didn't leave and get out of the way for the team buses to pull in. Someone got off the team bus and started screaming at a member of the staff here in New England saying, "Stop effing our bus." Not knowing that it was his own owners that were causing the delay.
That's great.
The owners were the ones causing the delay of the players getting off the bus and into the locker room, which I am told happened rather late, later than usual.
Yeah.
Long ride for Providence.
And is that
traffic? They were only there a couple of hours before the game.
Is that Moose and Glenn down there shooting at?
Yeah. Yes. Camera guys. Yeah. Good job.
Guys, the greatest.
You got Anthony Lynn getting off just cranking some tunes in his head.
Sure, that's who they first wanted to see when they got off that thing. Comcast guys, way to go.
Yep.
Loving it.
And there they are. There they Chargers. 617-779-0985. So, Shaughnessy, you must be feeling pretty good about the Pats going into the weekend.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, this game's a push. I mean, when you have a three-point margin to the home team, then everyone's saying they are even going in. I wasn't at the one in October because the Red Sox had a huge, I think it was a Yankee game. Was a huge
ALCS games one and two were surrounding that.
All right, so it's Houston that night on Sunday. But I remember being on the field with Joe Amo. And, like, you heard this roar because the baseball ended earlier. For some, I don't know how that happened, but it did. And we were doing a live shot down there, and all throughout the park, people were just reacting to the epic ending of beating the Chiefs in that one. So I didn't see it. And, you know, I've been reading up on it. And, you know, there's all this great, you know, the old guy and the young guy with the quarterback and just, you know, stopping one offense, stopping the other, how they're going to do it, et cetera. But, yeah, I'm not picking against the Patriots, not at this point.
Are you going this weekend?
Oh, yeah. It's supposed to be cold, huh, Zo?
Yeah.
Yeah, what up?
It's very cold.
Jeez, yeah. So I'll be there. Kansas City, here we come.
When are you scooping out, Saturday?
Oh, yeah, Saturday, through Detroit. Yeah. There's not a lot of nonstop action.
I saw that. I heard that yesterday.
Yeah, there's a little
and
bit.
And there's also a huge number of tickets available if anybody wants to go from
more
here.
Than 10,000.
More than 10,000 tickets
what's
have
wrong
hit
with
the secondary
people at
market.
Arrowhead Stadium.
They froze their ass off last week.
Because they don't want to go out there and deal with the cold?
They've never won the AFC Championship at home, if I'm
right.
I don't think.
It's first, they this, haven't this hosted the first it there. Ever hosted one at Arrowhead.
Oh, at Arrowhead. Well, when they won the Super Bowl in 67.
Super Bowl IV.
They won four and they were in one. The Packers beat them in one.
So where did Montana and that crew play when he was in?
They were at Arrowhead.
They're at Arrowhead. Arrowhead.
Oh, they didn't win it.
No,
they didn't win it.
They didn't host it either.
Four
they didn't host
the
it.
Only,
they were on a road.
It was Len Dawson. It was the 1-4, and Hank Stram with the rolled up program and all that stuff like that.
Yeah, but they weren't yet at Arrowhead.
Right. I don't know where the hell they were playing. Arrowhead's spectacular, but it is weird that and these teams have only met once in the playoffs themselves. I mean, the Chiefs and the
Patriots, and they're pioneered franchises of the AFL going back to 60. So
Arrowhead's going to be one of the older, I know, you know, oh, places yeah. like Soldier Field, but it's been remodeled. Arrowhead's going to be one of the older, original, pretty much untouched stadiums in the league.
I mean, yeah, I can't. I mean, Oakland, if they were still playing there, would have been in contention. I can't think of too much else, Beetle.
Yeah, that's
off the
it.
Top of my head.
That's an old place. Yeah. Old place.
Old.
Joe's in Woburn on the game. Joe.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, Joe.
I just had a couple of takes, but I want to agree with Zoe on his point that I don't think Brady's comment was about the Chargers game. I think that was just a collective comment he made because they had a few crap wins this year, you know, Detroit, Tennessee, Jacksonville. I think that the national, you know, just outlook on the Patriots was obviously the same crap. Brady's getting old, but I just wanted to agree with Zoe. I think Brady's kept his mouth shut for 19 years, and being as competitive of the guy that he is, I think, he, you know, he just has to say something sometime, you know. And then to get to my points, I think that the weather in KC, excuse me, is going to favor us because the way we're running the ball and KC's defensive line, I don't know to you guys, but it looks pretty porous to me all year. And the second point is everybody's Mahomes.
They're pretty good up front. I mean, let's not undersell them. I mean, they do have Jones, Ford, and Houston. So, I mean, they have some big boys up front.
But if the O-line does what they did last week, I mean,
but you're playing at home, you're listening to a snap count. You're firing off at the same time. Everything's going to be silent count this week, which makes it a little more difficult to get a jump on them. That's all.
No, I agree with you. But the way we've been running, it just looks good. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from Mahomes. The kid's had an amazing season. But let's be honest here. The kid could crap down his leg in the championship game. And how many times has Brady been there? I mean, if going in there, I feel pretty confident that there's a good chance this kid's going to freeze up. I'm not saying Kansas City's going to be easy, but I'm going with Brady.
All right.
All right, Joe. Thanks for the call,
yeah,
Joe.
I did. Well, what are we going to say at this point? I mean, that thing Sunday was really impressive.
Startling.
It was just, dominant. And again, I don't think it was a bad team they were playing. I'm not going there with that one.
I even joked with it with Bob prior to. I'm like, boy, it'd be great just to call just a comfortable game, you know, where like we're not biting our nails and just the anxiety of it.
I mean, it
happened.
It bothered me. I know that, you know, in the end of the third quarter and the fourth quarter, and, you know, I always get on them for keeping the foot in the pedal and, you know, letting Brady play and, you know, when the
game's at that point, you got to start fighting the clock.
But I mean,
you have that much of a cushion, you fight the clock.
Yeah, he saw that they didn't have enough possessions to come back and beat them, and they just, it was soft. But I didn't like the fact that the score ended up being as close as it was because it just, you
know. Dan, anybody watched that game, and as you can tell,
it was 59-7.
Millions of people watched that game. You knew it was an ass.
It was 59-7. That's what I'm putting in my book. And so 30 years from now, if somebody looks at it, we're just going to have to straighten them out.
Zolak and Bertrand.
Do they pose a threat?
98.5, the Sports Hub.
A 42-point quarter for Brooklyn. Carroll at the buzzer lobs it in where Kuruts catches it at the cup and lays it in. Now what may very well have been the Celtics' worst quarter of the year comes to an end. The Brooklyn Nets score 44 points.
So I think for much of this Celtics season, I've been very hesitant to get nervous or concerned about this team. All year I've been saying, no, give it a little bit more time. They're going to be fine. Too much talent. There's too much here. They're just working it out.
At some point,
back from the injury. Give this group time. They're going to be just fine. Wait till we get to the end of the year. They may not have the seed that they love.
Get in and play.
They're going to be good enough.
Yeah,
they're going to be good enough to go on the run. Started to doubt myself on this. I'm starting to doubt myself about the Boston Celtics. We welcome in the voice of the Boston Celtics and Sean Grandy with us here on Zolak and Bertrand on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Sean, this season seems to be getting to a point where people are starting to wonder maybe the issues they have are just indicative of what this team is.
And I think your feeling and the way you just verbalized it, I think has been earned by this group right now. I think that is the feeling. And I think what is really driving people insane is that they haven't been this sort of steady, good, seven games over 500. You know, the scoring differential is really good. They haven't been this team consistently. They've had insane, like the stock market the last couple of months. They just have crazy within games. And then look at this, you know, 2019 here. You just had a pretty horrific road trip. You had moments, you had frantic comebacks, but you were down 26, 27 in two of the three games. You know, you're down 12 to an Orlando team that had been struggling, although they just did beat Houston the next night. And you're coming off of a homestand in which you just didn't just win games. You were just beating the living hell out of people. So that is what I think is most concerning now, is that we have all of these indicators. You know, when you, like, let's say you lose your job and you don't have any money, you can't, but they say on TV, well, the indicators are good. Our economy is strong. You're like, no, it's, you know, you're looking at the reality saying, no, it's not. There is something wrong here. And you can't quite put your finger on it. And I think for everyone who thought they were going to win 60 games and be the number one seed, for those people, it's time to let that go and look at, you know, realistically what there is to get accomplished here.
Okay, to what you said. A week ago, we talked to you exact same time.
Yep.
And they turned that corner. You mentioned before you signed off, sort of an eye roll, that, oh, got to get on that plane. You got that tough back-to-back down in Miami. And we're like, look at each other thinking, tough back-to-back. Then the coach mentions how tough that's going to be. Does that get in the team's head that, you know, they took the foot off the gas against that team?
I think that it's not teams they're taking their foot off the gas against. You know, they've got wins against quality teams, and I think what's almost more, I don't know, it's not troubling.
Are they not hard enough?
Yeah, you almost feel, you know, Max and I are sort of in agreement, especially Max, like, watch, they're going to beat Toronto tomorrow. You know, Toronto's the best team in the league right now. They're 33-12, but, you know, they haven't been great on the road. This home road split is confusing because it's been a team that the last couple of years hasn't really been affected by that, particularly when they have Kyrie playing. And yet now they have just been a really ordinary, you know, subpar road team the last few weeks. And it always seems to be one particular thing. In each of these individual games, you could say, well, you didn't have Kyrie, Smart, or Aaron Baines last night, and you lose on the road by 7 to a team that's playing pretty well over the last month. You say, okay, that makes sense. But then you watch the game and you say, what, a 17-0 run in the middle of the third quarter? And it's all of these games that they've lost. We use the cliche, well, they got to play 48 minutes. You know why you say that? Because in this league, if you have a gap of 4 or 5 minutes where you just kind of lose your concentration or whatever, teams shooting threes are going to knock down a bunch of them, and suddenly all of these games the Celtics have lost that you didn't think they necessarily were going to. Look at the play-by-play, the play-by-play of the game on paper. There's a 17-1 run against them, and that is costing them all of these games. So why do things like that happen? That's why this team's driving people crazy.
Kyrie called out all the young guys over the weekend and spoke at length about his frustrations about the way things have gone so far this season. And then last night after the loss, seeing Jaylen Brown's comments, it seemed to me like Jaylen Brown was sort of firing back in the direction of Kyrie Irving, saying that we've got to have each other's backs. We can't be pointing fingers, and we need to be accountable as a group, saying it's not the young guys, it's not the old guys. And I'm paraphrasing, but it seems like there's some sort of back and forth now going on with players on this team, and it seems to be getting a little bit more public. So what is the current state of affairs inside that locker room?
I think what would surprise people is how it is everyone kind of really gets along. The outward indicators, and I agree with you completely. I'm reading these things, and I'm wondering why a player who doesn't play last night is talking to the media for 10 minutes during the day, because if you're of that more the conservative thing about keep it all in-house, as I tend to be, you say, why does this stuff need to be aired? And I think, honestly, this is what I think about Kyrie. I think this is all outrageously genuine on his part. I think he is trying to lead, and I think about the guy he played with for many years, for the last four years, and I, you know, for 3 years in Cleveland. And I think that's what his role model. This is what LeBron would do.
And I'm not gonna ask you if he regrets what he stated prior to the start of the year, where he said, you know what, I'm gonna be here. I'm signing here. This is gonna be my home. this is where I want to be. Not that he regrets that, but the fact he said that, like, damn, guys, it's not supposed to be this. I've got to fix that. And now that he's got to own that. You know what I'm saying?
So is there a fear now? Should there be a fear that he's going to leave?
I don't want to ask it. I think the fact that he said it.
Like pressure all, for him to do this now, you know?
I think it was genuinely how he felt. I think it was, even if it wasn't, I thought it was brilliant on his part, because now you're not dealing with questions that he would have been dealing with had he not done it.
Oh my God.
I think it puts more pressure on him to, not to stay, but to make this work here.
Right.
I think, listen, you look at Kyrie. What does Kyrie do, you know, in his life and on the court in games? He makes things. He's so outrageously talented that he's the kid who's gotten so good at the video game that he makes it harder for himself than it has, because he needs the challenge. I think this is how I think he wants it to work. I think he's going to be like all great players. He's going to be stubborn, and he wants it to work here, and he wants things to be successful. And he wants, you know, like all great players, he wants to win. And I've said this to a lot of people over the last couple of months. If you have a team that's underachieving, I think there's no other way to spin it, and this team is, in whatever way you projected them, they are underachieving either a little or a lot or whatever, you don't want a happy locker room. You know, you want guys to be unhappy about it. You want there to be team meetings. You want veteran players holding younger players accountable. You want there to be this bit of discomfort, because you want guys that don't want to be 25 and 18 in seven games out of first, because they think they can be better. They know they can be better. So when I hear about team meetings and things like that, I almost am like, good. You know, that's the way it should be. And these are the moments you look back. I don't think you want this team to be completely at peace with where they are right now.
Sean, how's that working for Brad Stevens, though? I mean, because his job's a lot harder now with the expectations and the talent.
Yep.
And then this what appears to be split with the young guys and the old guys. I mean, how's the coach is going to say the right thing in this situation? How's he really feeling about it?
We talked, you know, I asked him that question last night, and we talked at length about it. I think there's a couple things that are interesting. One is that a lot of this, not all of it, not the specifics weren't predictable, how this was going to play. But I think everyone close to it knew the expectations were too high and that there were going to be issues. I don't think anyone thought it was going to be quite like this, but it's like knowing your flight's going to have turbulence. Oh, there's a lot of bad weather out there. And then when this could be a bad flight. And then when you're in it, it's not fun when you're going through it. But even though you knew it was coming, I thought he said something, his answer yesterday when people were talking about Kyrie sort of reacting to that last play in Orlando in the huddle and afterwards. And he had a great answer about he wants players to be involved. This isn't the old, this isn't Bill Fitch, right, Scoop? This isn't like the old days when my way, the highway, and you're going to do all this. He wants input from the players. He wants to know. They're the guys running it. So he wants to know what it is they want. Ultimately, he's going to make the decision. I think he's okay with some of the, you know, I think he was really genuinely happy about the team meeting. And guys, sort of, you know, the Festivus airing of grievances and all that, I think he thought it was healthy. But listen, this was never going to be an easy gig for him. This was never going to be a Coach of the Year year for him. Ironically, last year was when he didn't get any votes. So that's the way this thing is set up. And I think you just want steady at the helm.
But he can't want that video at the end of the game in Orlando when they're, you know, they're in his face, or Irving's in his face after the game. That's not a good thing for everybody.
I don't think it's a good thing. I think the idea of, you know, like I said, Kyrie can't. I think there's a lot of stuff Kyrie is doing publicly because he, again, the talking to the media stuff after the game, that's him doing what he feels needs to be done. I think in the moment, I don't think Kyrie is thinking about the optics of that. And again, when I say the word optics, that's when I question, do the optics, how much do they matter? How much of this is perception versus reality? You knew the second we saw Marcus Morris give Jalen that little shove, you know, in the huddle, you knew that's what the whole thing was going to be about the next day when they squashed that 30 seconds later. But again, I no one understands perception and reality. We've all been doing this for a long time, that was going to be what the topic was. So I think all those little things add up to a team that is not quite at peace with itself. There's no doubt about that. But my point is they shouldn't be right now. And so this is when, you know, Brad is a guy, think about in games, when there's a scoring run, sometimes he doesn't call a timeout. because you want them guys on the floor to play out of it. And I think they're in the big picture. There's something kind of like that going on right now too. You got to play out of this.
Called a timeout real quick last night, and now they've got Toronto. So it doesn't get any easier for this team.
No, and again, the harder it's been. You know, they've already beaten Toronto here. They've beaten Milwaukee here. You know, they had the other game with Milwaukee when there were five or six guys out. I would be surprised if it's not. And the two Toronto games have been tremendous this year. I think in the big picture, you've got to step back. The things that need to be fixed need to be fixed. But I think the angst about the standings right now. Listen, you want to get to third, obviously. You don't want to be in that 4-5 if you can avoid it. But I think that the reality is, the Celtics, to get where a lot of people thought they were going to be able to go at the beginning of the year, to get to the Eastern Conference Finals even, and certainly to get to the Finals, they're going to have to win a series or two on the road. I don't think there's any doubt about that. My point is that if they what needs to be fixed, you'd rather be a team that has alternated between being dominant and being pretty ordinary than a team that's just been steady the whole time. Because, as we saw in 2010, if you have the ability to dominate, the ability is there within this roster to be that good and to win playoff series on the road. So you'd rather be that than be kind of like decent all year. That said, they've got time to get fixed what needs to be fixed, and then if and when they do, then they're going to be that dangerous road team in the playoffs, and that's how you got to look at it.
All right, Sean, appreciate the time as always. We'll talk next week.
You got it, guys.
All right, Sean Grandy joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline.
What's going on?
Zolak and Bertrand continues.
Hey!
On 98.5, the Sports Hub. Listen to the podcast on the 98.5, the Sports Hub app.
Once again, a lot of talking heads in the media talking about how this is the end of the dynasty, you're going to fall off a cliff and become a bum and all this stuff. So, you know, I'm sure winning's sweet, but is it that little bit sweeter when you're constantly proving people wrong all the time?
I just like winning.
I
just like winning.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody hands go up. And they stay there. And they say yeah. And they stay there.
11:42 here with Dan Shaughnessy, the Boston Globe, in studio with us.
He's such a honky.
Who, me?
Yeah, it's fine.
So I'm a white guy.
Yeah. I mean, like, honky. Like, really honky.
That was Tom Brady, of course, talking after the game on Sunday. He also had a comment on the field to Tracy Wolfson about everyone thinks that we suck and can't win a game. His mindset is obviously in a better place than what maybe we thought it was going into the playoffs. What do you think of this, Dan? What do you make of this? These comments after the game, how do you not?
I loved it. I mean, first of all, when you're in the press box and then you get, you know, the big thing is, you know, getting the elevator, the post game, downstairs. And, you know, so a lot of times you can miss something like that because we're not watching the game
right
on TV. And, you know, what are they going to say in the room? And then Tom in the room was, and you just played it, the Ewan McGregor, whoever asked that question, you know, it was
jolly old chap.
Yeah. And Tom gave it the boring answer. I just like winning. I'm like, okay, he's being boring again. So I was unaware of it. And I had already fired off a couple of editions of the column because I'm fast and we do things quickly now.
Oh.
And then Tara Sullivan came up to me, you know, in the press box, and she said, what about Brady saying that thing to Tracy? I'm like, what thing? You know, so I'm like, well, this is great. This is gold. Some truth comes out. You know, heat of the moment coming off the field. And Beadle, I heard you earlier. I think you're right. I think you said this. He's really talking about himself.
He's talking about what people have all said about him.
Because it sounds like a bad move to say.
It sounds worse if he says that, though.
People think,
you think I suck? Right. Yeah, I guess I don't suck, huh? I mean, I'd love it. It'd be awesome if he did it.
I'm with you on that.
Wouldn't that be great?
Oh, yeah.
What do you got now, Kellerman? What up, Stephen A? Right?
But anytime
Bleacher Report.
Anytime any truth pours forward, it's like it's gold. So yeah, this is great. So that goes right up high and everybody plays off that, and we're still doing it, and it speaks to the way the day went. I think it speaks to the future. Having this whole thing with Mahomes now, it's going to be a cold weather game, which we know Tom's good at. I'm fired up. I mean, I got my coat on. I'm pretending it's game time already.
Yeah. Is it reality that everyone thinks they suck?
Of course not.
No.
Straw man.
It's hyperbole, but you know what?
Doesn't matter.
It's it's just a little bit of insight into how they're doing it and how he's doing it, and that he's still capable of getting pissed off at what people on those stupid shows on ESPN are saying or whatever other show he's watching.
Yeah.
How about how hard Edelman played that game?
Whatever show it is, Brady can still get mad. He can still take it and sort of internalize it and go out on the field and play a certain way with an edge in a pissed off manner because of what people are saying. That's great because he's told us so many times he doesn't care what people are saying. He's told us that he's all about, you know, what the noise, ignore the noise. I don't pay attention to the noise. We got that in Tom versus Time. We got that when he's talked about the four principles, right? Right. Oh, that external stuff, that doesn't impact me at all. One
doesn't
bit.
Move the needle. No.
Well, now we know that it does. Now we know that it still does, and he still got that thing about him, and he can still use it to his advantage. I think that's good.
That's all the sixth round, 199th
they do it all.
There,
you they know? Hear it all. They look at the schedule. They count games. He said he never counted games. He's sitting there getting rubbed down by Alex last year. Yeah, we got to get the 4-2. Then we get the 5-2, 6-2, and we go to. We got to go to Denver, 7-2. Then we go to Mexico City, 8-2. They look ahead. Of course they do. Look at the schedule as much as we do as a talk show.
Good.
They hear it all.
Love
Not
it.
Necessarily do they hear it, but people tell them.
I think he's capable of selectively choosing when he wants to pay attention to it.
Well,
I think he is a guy who is capable of letting it roll off his back and not deal with it.
Yes.
But I think there are times where he might look for it.
He is
he consciously says, all right, what are you guys all saying about me?
Beetle. 19 years, he's never made one reference to anything that's been said or written that I can think of, ever. Like, not a specific, I don't remember calling out anybody in a press conference or...
Even during Deflategate, he was asked about direct shots, like, from the ESPN people, and he deferred and just really wouldn't take the bait on it.
I mean, you know, there's been times I thought, well, maybe he doesn't like me anymore, you know, I kind of rode this thing pretty hard and... But you don't get that. You don't get any evidence of that. I mean, you can tell who Bill's mad at. You know, he won't say it.
Craig Bedard.
But you can tell. You know, you get the stink guy, you get the freeze out, you get the Mickey the Dunce answer, you know, all that stuff like that. But
Joe
but with
pool.
But with Tom, it's almost.
What do you think Bedard did to him?
Tom the Tool.
I don't know. It was great.
They're fine.
It really was. It was like, what the? Bedard told us, Alan, post-game that he talked to Bill after the fact and said, you know, that really wasn't a great question. I'm sorry. So he made nice with Bill after the fact.
There was when
Greg is in today, by the way, I believe, right? Okay. Tuesday?
Should be.
Tuesday's
with Bedard.
Yeah, it was normal.
When I did the book
Tuesday.
With Francona, everybody was mad at me, you know, the whole thing. And Lucchino, his first one down there after the book came out, it was a giant. We were inside. It was raining that day in Fort Myers and a giant room. And every question I asked, he would say, no comment. And then, like, someone would ask the exact same question. He'd like, launch into this
expound
long
upon it and give you a great answer and all kinds
of
stuff.
It was not, like, hidden hatred. It was just, like, but with Bill, it's you can tell. You got to read between the lines. With Tom, you can't tell. I think even if the guy is asking the question might have gone at him, if Max Kellerman or Stephen A. were down there, I think he'd still answer the same way.
Without Zolak and Bertrand, your workday is just pushing papers and eating lunch.
What, is there a problem?
With Zolak and Bertrand, it's pushing papers, eating lunch, and talking sports.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Way better. Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Mike just did the top of temp, right?
I did.
It's cold. What's the temp?
29 degrees.
It's cold as bofa out there. Jesus.
Beetle, what did you just say about this
I
song?
Love this song. This version of it.
Is that the Beatles?
This is the Beatles.
Well, I would give them the silver on this. Didn't Fats Domino do this?
Yeah, it's his song.
He owns
it's his
it.
Song.
Yeah, it's Fats Domino.
It's their cover of it.
Yeah.
That's what all the early Beatles stuff is.
It's a lot of
other
covers.
People's music.
This ain't the Beatles.
It is, yeah.
It is.
It's a rare example of Paul kind of trying to rock out. Get very.
I believe you can get this on the Beatles for Sale album.
John song. So, Zoe, I have a question for you that was sent from a listener, a friend of mine's a listener in New York.
Oh.
Ready?
Yeah.
Question for Zoe.
Good.
How much do the Pats play down to the competition? Detroit, Jacksonville, blah, blah, blah. versus Wait. Just not being a good road team. Chicago was a good road win. Pittsburgh was a tough road loss. Both good teams. What is your answer?
Chicago wasn't a great road win. It was a good road win. It got you think, okay, this is where you're going to turn it around. Like Detroit, you blew. There's something to be said for them losing five games yep. the way they did. It's not good. Do they play down? That's somewhat part of it because I think, you know, Dion, and I told him this the other day, like, Dion said, I think this
Such
team,
an excuse.
These veterans get bored. Mm-hmm. You get bored during the regular season. All you want is the playoffs to get here. Like, those last two games, we've been in those before where you're getting ready for a team you're a 10-point, 13-point favorite yeah. for. You have everything to lose in that type of game, which makes it an anxiety, pressure-packed type game mentally for you because – God, if we don't get out and just do our thing, we're going to get yeah. – it's going to be an interesting
yeah,
game.
Yeah, they started at 1-2 because they were bored, Dan.
I know.
Now, that has nothing to do with it. I'm talking about the end of the year.
Okay. Here's my question. Sucked. My question is –
What? Jacksonville, Detroit? I mean, come on. You can't use that.
Yeah,
Dion can't use that, and you can't use that.
I'm not using it. It's part of it, though.
Here's my
– It's a little bit of everything.
So what happens on the sideline with the players? Let's just say the defensive unit of the Chargers, when what they're doing
right
isn't working –
Yep.
And they do it six times in a row, and it doesn't work five times out of the six. They just roll. I mean, does anyone say anything?
Yeah, they have Gus Bradley kept coming over. He and his three boobs at work under him. And they take their Microsoft Surface, and they take the stylus pen out, and they're looking at this, and then they show this guy this and this. And then all the guys hurry up and get their – they could not wait to get their helmets on the back of that. Those little things you put your helmets on to keep your helmet warm.
Yeah.
And there are little things that pop up out of the bench. There's heaters. And then, I mean.
No one's saying, how about if we switch to man coach?
It's kind of on the head coach, too. You know, this is a little bit on Anthony Lynn, too, understanding an ass kicking that's going on.
And it was amazing to me.
You got Logan Ryan chirping on Twitter saying, oh, LOL, would they think they're going to come out and play that zone?
Yeah.
And then they're going to switch to man? Brady's going to eat that zone up. Like Logan Ryan knew it. Like, they can't play man. Now you're going to try and play man. You're going to get your ass kicked.
Yeah, there was some good
stuff. Like, they knew how to play Brady, though. So he's telling you without telling you. He's laughing at them for not coming out man and playing bump and knocking Edelman off his route. They knew they had to do that in Tennessee. So Vrabel, I think, you know, first year at Tennessee, I think could potentially already be a better coach or understanding of how a game's going and how you switch than Anthony Lynn is. He did that with Marcus Mariota.
That always kills me. And speaking of tweets, you saw Woodson's tweet during the
– Sure.
That was best professional athlete tweet ever. You know, when Vinatieri missed the kick in the snow. Now he misses in
now
the
he
snow.
Misses.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, he only had to be 46. I mean, God, we're talking 17 years ago. It was but funny.
Just tweet, the fact that he's still thinking about it. You know,
that kick made him look a lot older.
Yeah, well, you got to shave that thing, too. You know,
Hardy doesn't
help. You know,
Hardy's grown his. It's like
Hardy looks good. Vinatieri looks just old. You know? I know old. Yeah.
But I don't think it's that they've played down to the level of competition. Okay. I think that they had some bad, bad road losses. Detroit was a horrible loss. Tennessee was a horrible loss. They were offensively inept at Pittsburgh. I can't put that on getting bored or playing down. I mean, those are all important spots. They started, you know, and I guess if there's one good, what's their best road loss? Jacksonville, I guess.
Yeah, you fought in that game.
Like, you fought, you scored points late, you got within striking distance.
Chris Hogan was beating that
the way
Ramsey kid a little
bit. I mean, but coming off a loss, going to Detroit the next week, they got spanked out there.
I know. It feels like.
I mean, that's not about playing down or not having desire or being bored by the season.
More recently, the way Miami and Pittsburgh ran on them, I just thought this season's going to have a bad ending somewhere. And I don't feel that way now. Even if they lose, it's not going to be a bad ending.
It's almost like the defense got more active and progressively active as the year went on. And it seems like it started to take shape around the Green Bay game. Like, let's start, you know what? If we're going to get pushed around and get our ass kicked, let's at least attempt to hit some holes. Let's put some people in some blitz holes. Let's apply pressure instead of sitting there catching people and letting our little linebackers get blocked.
I think this week we're going to have a lot of blind faith in the Patriots.
Oh, no question.
And I think it's going to all stem from the way they played on Sunday. And I don't know how we overlooked that, Dan. I don't know how we look at the way they played Sunday, which was by far their best game of the year, where they just were so good in so many ways.
Yeah.
And don't factor that into what we're going to say about this game before it's played on Sunday. And I think there's going to be some blind faith there. So if you want to roll on this, Foxborough, here it is. you've been terrible on the road, and you've given us no reason to believe in you on the road. None. We can't base a pick of the Patriots this weekend on anything other than some blind faith, because on the road, you've been a very different team, and you've been a mediocre to, I would say, borderline bad team on the road.
3-5 is bad, and historically, they don't win. I mean, it's been 12 years since they won on the road in the playoffs. The last three road games in the playoffs, they lost to Manning all three times.
I
Colts,
can't,
and then twice in Denver.
I can't remember
this. They have not won a road playoff game in over a decade.
12 years.
Yeah, and it is how you finish. I can't remember this. I think Matt Chatham tweeted this, that they, like, their last seven games going back in 0-1, like, we were 4-3 or 3-4 during that stretch. Like, we weren't great finishing the year, but we got hot. And then you remember Vinatieri with a, you know, don't talk to me or don't talk to us at the end. Like, that was their thing. They were so disrespected, and they didn't want anybody on the bandwagon, and they were going to circle their wagons. And it,
no, 0-1, they were 5-5 and won every other game since the rest of the season.
Okay. They were like,
they were 5-5 after that Rams game.
They couldn't lose. They didn't lose again. The Rams game at home was their last loss of the year.
Okay. Maybe it was another.
Maybe you're thinking of something.
And then 0-3, they won 14 in a row, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Going into the playoffs.
I just remember Chatham tweet from back, like, when things were going dire, those two-game losing streak, and you're thinking, okay, we were kind of the same team during one of our runs.
Maybe it was
that. I don't know.
The start of 0-3.
So speaking of 0-2.
But it's still that disrespect card, like, Vinatieri. Yeah. You know, here's a kicker yapping, like, don't talk to me. You know, it was at the rally, I think.
I tried to think back now to 0-1, the one you just referenced, when they ran the table at the end and all that stuff. So they went to Pittsburgh. There was no week off that year because of 9/11. So, and right to New Orleans. Did the team come home?
Yeah. Yeah, you come home, get your stuff, but you were in stuff went, already ready to go.
There's still. What day was media day that week and stuff?
It must have been Tuesday.
Tuesday? I mean,
yes, they came home for a day.
We went straight from Pittsburgh to New Orleans.
Really?
Just packed and see you later. Yep. And I'm wondering, you know, given what we talked about with the Chargers last week and all that, but for media people, it was
the team doesn't have to get down there until, like, late Monday night. That's normally, like, the plan. Like, you go down Monday.
Yeah.
As a team. One goes in early, one goes late.
It's hard to imagine a Super Bowl. I mean, it feels now, it's like, oh, well, you do the whole 2 weeks, but it feels like without it,
what? But nobody believed in them then.
No.
I mean, nobody believed in them. I mean, that was really nobody believing in them. No one believing they were going to go to Pittsburgh and win, and they did. And Pittsburgh certainly didn't believe that.
I mean, the Steelers 15-1 that year?
They had their bags packed and ready to go.
Yeah.
No, Steelers were 15-1 04.
That was 04, okay.
And then they were the biggest underdogs in the Super Bowl ever.
Yeah.
Going in against the Rams.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to talk about no one believing in you. You did. You shocked the world.
Are we going to have to hear about how they taped the walkthrough if they play the Rams again?
Oh, Dan, of course you would bring that up.
No, I'm just saying.
Answer is yes. We're going to have to hear about that again.
Trying out Marshall Faulk.
Maybe the other station sent Tomasi to cover it. I don't know.
And if they play the Saints, we're going to have to talk about Bounty Gate probably, right?
Not as much.
No.
The Rams brings out, you know, more of the old stuff, I think. You know.
Well, for you.
God, it'd be great.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.